Steve Dale's Other World on WGN. Welcome! It is 8 minutes after 2 o'clock, and you know what? We've had so many experts on this program talking about medical things, and we're going to have one of those experts right here in just a moment. And it includes Dr. Fauci was on the show. Dr. Hotez has been on the show several times. Dr. Novak, who is the head of the Moderna trial, has been on the show several times as well. And, you know, when you turn on the media and you hear the problem is the Delta variant, yeah, it's caused complications. No question about that. Makes things a little tougher because it is so virulent. Having said that, in my view, that is not the problem. The problem is we need people to get vaccinated. And some of the explanations for people not being vaccinated are absolutely archaic. At least that's my view. We have a medical professional in the studio, no less a president. I know dermatology is what you do, Renata Block, but I'm curious if you have a view on what I just said.
I think you make a very good point, and I know we were discussing it a little bit before we came on air. Yes, I think becoming vaccinating and getting that herd immunity is probably the most important thing that we can do.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And we know that two of the three vaccines does a great job with the Delta variant. According to the experts, one of the vaccines, the Johnson & Johnson, still does a really, really good job with the Delta variant. And that's not the problem. The problem is if you're not vaccinated, it is even more virulent. But now the unvaccinated people are like a cesspool for a potential another variant and another variant and another variant, because given the opportunity, the virus will mutate.
Correct.
And it will only mutate if it has an opportunity to mutate, and it wouldn't if it doesn't infect people.
Exactly. No, that you make a very, very good point about that. So I always tell people the pandemic is really not over yet. So
yeah.
We're still heading for fall, so that's going to be interesting what happens.
And we'll talk a little about that in a moment. You are the president, newly elected president. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I voted for you. I'm in Chicago. I can do that. Of the Board of the Society of Dermatology Physician Assistants. What is that?
So the Society of Dermatology Physician Assistants has been established in 1994, and it consists of over 4,000 dermatology PAs throughout the United States.
Now, in the medical field in general, you know, you had to come because you're the president. You came with your bodyguard here today because, after all, you are the president. But 10 years ago, if you said PA or even physician assistant to a person on the street, they'd have no idea what you're talking about.
You know, we try really hard to educate our patients. Unfortunately, there's still some confusion out there of what we really do. People always ask me when I'm going to be done with medical school, or, you know, it's constant. I've been doing this for 18 years. So,
So what do you do?
So I specialize in dermatology. And like I said, for 18 years, you can pretty much specialize in any specialty when you graduate PA school. You're pretty much just general medicine. And I decided to go into dermatology.
And it could be, so the answer to the question I'm about to ask might be the same, maybe, if it's neurology, if it's oncology or dermatology. What does, on a daily basis, a PA pretty much do? To me, I think, I'm sure there are many more things you do, but one of those things is communicate.
Communication is so important. Patient education is extremely important. And one thing that PAs do, they do diagnostic work to treat and cure patients. So we see patients independently in the office. So if you needed to come in and you couldn't get an appointment with the physician, we're usually available. And it's very convenient because then people can get in a little bit sooner than waiting 2-3 weeks, especially if they have a rash.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's true across the board in all medical fields, you know. And now for to see a specialist, it's especially hard to get in because there's this pent-up demand.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And it's at my practice, we make an exception. We really kind of triage the patient when they're calling, and we really try to see them the same day because we know how important it is, especially if you have a rash or something come up. It's not a very comfortable thing, and people want to get treated right away.
Of course they do. Are we living through this change right now where physician assistants, where 10 years ago, what was that? People had no idea. Today, I think people have some idea. Is the profession evolving? Is medicine evolving where 10 years from now, or even a couple of years from now, your role will even be, I was going to say more important, but more significant might be a better way to put it?
It is significant, but I think it'll be better recognized. The AAPA HOD House of Delegates just passed.
What is the AAPA?
So American Academy of Physician Assistants, House of Delegates. They just passed a name change for us to Physician Associate.
Oh.
And that is nothing that we call ourselves right now. That's going to take years to implement because it's state by state rules and regulations, laws, and everything like that. But the reason they did that is really to be more reflective of what we do, more of an associate team, healthcare team versus an assistant, like a medical assistant.
All right. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. Already have some questions for you. And one question we have via text over and over and over again are about spray sunscreens. Are they safe to use? I know there was a recall, but can I use any of those? And another question, are some sunscreens better than others for certain circumstances? And how do you know what those circumstances are? We're going to find all of that out and take your questions at 312-981-7200 next on WGN. Steve Dale's Other World on WGN. It is 1:18. Renata Block is in the studio. She is the president of the Board of Society of Dermatology Physician Assistants. And yes, we have questions for you. I'm putting you to work, Renata. And one of the questions is over and over again via text. Well, I've heard about the recall. Can I buy any spray now, or should I just stay away from sprays that are sunscreens? What do you think people should do?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned spray, because when I was first noted about the recall, you know, they pretty much voluntarily, Johnson & Johnson took the sprays off. But the study goes a little bit deeper than that. I actually pulled the report from Valisher, and they have found that some lotions and creams also have trace elements of the benzene in them. So the question is,
and what is this benzene that we're talking about?
So benzene is something that is emitted from cigarette smoke, gasoline. If you live in a city, it's in our air, if you will.
Well, it's pretty ubiquitous. It's in plastics, I think.
Yes,
too.
It's made. Yeah. It's actually used to produce or manufacture plastics, resins, synthetics, as well as drugs, other things. So when this came out, you know, there is no benzene ingredient in sunscreen. Period. This is more of a contamination issue. And people have to be aware of that.
So it's like the food recalls you hear of, that something got into the product here, potentially something got into it?
Correct.
Aha.
Correct.
Well, mm-hmm. They haven't made that clear, because I think, I mean, I understand the question that I've received over and over. Okay, should I be concerned about all sprays? And apparently your answer is no, there's no reason to be.
Yes, there's no reason to be. I mean, the risk, you know, the risk of getting skin cancer is much higher than your exposure to to the benzene, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you know, people argue that the aerosols are bad because what are you inhaling, you know? So it's like you can have an argument with anything out on the market, but you have to look at the bigger picture and the risk versus the benefit of everything. And
but you don't have to use aerosols. So
you don't.
Do you recommend then, because you are inhaling whatever it is you're spraying.
Exactly.
So do you recommend then people, if they can, choose something that isn't an aerosol that you just spread on you?
I'll be honest with you. I recommend any sunscreen you can get on your body.
Right, but you evaded the question a bit. So do you avoid those sprays? Or
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. I don't avoid any sunscreen, to be honest with you. I think whatever is convenient for the person to use and to make sure that they're using it, then that is what I recommend.
So, I don't know, 200 years ago, maybe people didn't get skin cancer as much, but there wasn't sunscreen, but there was the sun. So what changed?
So that's a great question. Skin cancer has been around for a very long time. In the last 30 years, it has doubled. I think a lot of change has happened because back in before the 1920s, people weren't actively going out to get a tan and seeking to get that bronze glow, if you will, as it was shown for people to be working outside, and high society didn't want to be associated with, I don't work outside, I don't have a tan. But Coco Chanel is actually the one who sparked this whole trend. And I love Coco Chanel, but this is the one thing I don't like about her, is because she went in to the French Riviera, she got a sunburn, she came back with this tan skin, and everybody thought fashion trend just started. So we can blame that in the 1920s.
I had no idea about that. So another question is, which sunscreen do I choose? So not only, and I don't know what this listener means exactly, as far as brands, or they're rated also, right? So is it rating? Is it brand? How do you make? Because there you go, either online or to a store, and you see like shelves of these mm-hmm. possibilities. How do you know what to choose?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very overwhelming. I know what I'm looking for. I know what I'm doing. And then when I walk down that shelf or the aisle, I'm thinking, oh, my God, how does someone who doesn't know what to pick? And I think people just get overwhelmed and just avoid it altogether. But let's make it simple. Number one, look for an SPF 30. Okay.
What is SPF?
So that stands for sun protection factor, and that was initiated back in 1978. And it's basically the amount of time that it takes you to develop a sunburn. So it's really focusing on UVB rays, and UVB rays are the ones that can cause the sunburn. Lo and behold, we have UVA rays, and those penetrate a little bit deeper and can also contribute to skin damage, and that's where the broad spectrum terminology came in place, and that wasn't until 2011.
Okay, so which one do we choose?
So I'm going to make it very easy for you. Look for an SPF 30. Look for something that has zinc oxide, titanium dioxide.
Now that sounds like something Superman might drink. Why are we looking for whatever the heck that is?
Well, this is it. There are chemical and physical sunscreens. And chemical sunscreens have had a bad rap, obviously. The benzene is obviously taking over the sunscreen if people should even be using it. And benzene's not even in sunscreen. Bottom line is chemical sunscreens get absorbed into the skin, and UV then gets broken down. When you have a
physical... What do you mean? I'm sorry, you're losing me. It's a good lecture, though.
You.
I'm getting continuing education credit here.
I'm so glad.
So what's the... I mean, serious, this is really... I don't know if all of you knew this, but I didn't. So what are you referring here to?
So it's pretty much... Let's take it again. There's chemical sunscreens, there's physical sunscreens.
What are chemical sunscreens?
Chemical sunscreens are oxybenzone.
Okay.
Octooxylate. So
are those the kind you rub on?
So all the sunscreens, when you're walking down that aisle and you flip that tube or can, lotion over, you're going to see the active ingredients. And you're either going to see that it's a mineral block or a chemical block. And that should make then your decision, like, do I want to put chemicals on my body or do I want a mineral block? I personally tell everybody, do the mineral block. The mineral block is deemed safer, if you will. And it's something that it's safe for 6 months old. So
how do you know it's a mineral block?
It's going to say zinc oxide or titanium dioxide.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be your mineral block or physical block.
Now, are there some sunscreens now that say, oh, we can do more than just be a sunscreen? Mm-hmm. We could provide other things, too.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up, because they are there are newer generations coming out with sunscreens. Some of them have, like, vitamin C, CE ferulic in it.
They have what?
Vitamin C.
That I know.
Yeah,
what's
CE ferulic. So
What's that?
Basically, it's antioxidants that are going to give you that extra protection.
Do they work?
Yeah, they're amazing. I actually always recommend an antioxidant under SPF, especially in the morning before you go out the day. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why not? You take multivitamins, or at least many of us do. So this is another way of getting that multivitamin or whatever it is that's in there.
Think of it as a fire extinguisher from the UV damage, pollution damage.
Hmm.
Yeah, think of that as an extra protector for your skin.
Now, what if it's a cloudy day? Even a rainy day, do you put sunscreen on?
Yes. You know I'm going to say yes.
I did know that. But why?
Okay.
It washes off if you get wet.
Yes, it does. So that's why you have to reapply it every 1 to 2 hours.
Oh, who does that?
Exactly. Who does that? And that's why I'm on your show, because I want people to start doing that.
Yes. Why?
So number one, sunscreen, as remember I mentioned the sun protection factor.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say a sun protection factor of 30, okay, gives you 30 times the protection of preventing a sunburn. Okay, so that's what, 300 minutes if it takes you 10 minutes to burn, right?
Okay.
So broad spectrum is then going to protect you from UVB and UVA, all right? So what happens is your body is going to absorb it. You're going to sweat it off. If you go swimming, then it's going to be washed off.
Even if it says that it's okay to use in water, it's still going to wash off?
So you have to read the label.
Okay.
80%, or I'm sorry, waterproof. Look for the waterproof label. And that, again, can vary from sunscreen to sunscreen. But the one thing I want to point out is I think the FDA is really honing in and trying to define that a little bit better for people, because, it, like you said, it can be very confusing.
But why on a rainy day if it's really cloudy out?
So it's the UV index. So no matter if you're outside, the sun is still out. UV index can be very low on a cloudy day, and you don't need all the protection as far as like shade and hat and sunscreen and all of that. But you definitely have to have some protection against the UV radiation. So sunscreen is probably the easiest thing, and on top of the clothes that you wear, obviously. But when you have a high UV index and that's going to be a very sunny day, then you're going to have the susceptibility of more sun exposure and burn.
We have like 30 seconds here. How do people find you?
They could find me at Advanced Dermatology and Aesthetic Medicine in the South Loop.
Okay, or online, because you're famous on Instagram.
SavvyDermDiva.com.
SavvyDermDiva.com. Her name is Renata Block, President of the Board of Society of Dermatology Physician Assistants. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.